Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Infinite Worlds podcast. I'm your host, Winston Ward, publisher of Infinite Worlds magazine. As always, I'm joined by my co-host, Nick the Tooth.
All right, y'all. It has definitely been a minute, you know. It is so good to be back. Tooth, it's been like, what, 6 weeks or more since we recorded an episode? So, you know, I apologize for that to you and to all of those listening. That's kind of on me. But we are back now, so at least for this episode. What's going on, Tooth?
I don't know, because my mind is like stuck in like a looper sci-fi mode where my mind is replaying, trying to figure out when we recorded last.
I know.
Where was I? It was probably November.
It might have been November.
Or October.
It's been so long.
Yeah.
I think that's when our last episode was posted. See, the thing is, as of right now, guys, while we're recording this, we have another episode that hasn't been produced yet. Andrew's been experiencing some delays. I have been extremely busy. Tooth has moved again. So multiple times. You're in Florida now, right?
No, I was in, let me see, last time we recorded, I was in like Brentwood, Santa Monica. And after that, I was back in Newport Beach.
Right.
And then after that, then I was in North Florida.
Oh, boy.
And then now I'm in Miami.
Jeez Louise, dude. So, guys, when you wonder, like, how come they're not producing podcasts at, like, a greater rate, you could just call that the answer. You know, we're both pretty busy people, but we will try harder. I don't know how many episodes I've started with. It's been too long. Let's try to make this more regular, but we suck at it. So, you know, all right.
No, but the good thing is though, my goal for like the past, I would say 6-7 months, I would say the past year is to really set down roots. And so right now my goal has been to get to Miami because I think I've settled on Miami, that I want to put down roots for good in Miami. And so I'm here.
Okay. Yeah.
I've been here a couple of days and like a week, and I'm loving it. I love it.
Is the plan a school? Is that what's going on with you? And just
I'm gonna open it. I'm gonna open a jiu-jitsu academy.
Well, sweet. The people of Miami will be able to better defend themselves from now on.
You know what happened to me though is it's funny. It's like you learn so much. The more you travel, the more you learn about yourself. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And what I realized even when I was back in Sicily is I would spend, I'm going to confess this right now. I would spend every single day on my phone's weather app.
Yeah.
And I was obsessed like with finding like the perfect weather. For some reason, I didn't know that about myself. I guess I should have because I live in Southern California.
Oh, yeah.
The weather's always perfect.
Yeah, yeah.
But I was just, even Southern California, I was like, I cannot. In January, February, it's too cold. So mm-hmm. I was like, all right, I want to live on the equator. I want to be warm. I like to be warm all the time. And then I just finally realized, you know what? I want to live in Miami. Miami's so freaking cool. It's always summer.
You only have to worry about the weather in Miami in like July and August.
Uh-huh.
During hurricane season.
And that's when it's hot. And that's when I'll go to visit my daughter in London.
They don't have any hurricanes in London.
They don't have any hurricanes and it won't be 100 degrees. So
yeah, that's pretty good. That's a pretty good plan.
Right?
We're like polar opposites. It's so funny. You're working yourself into that position where you could live in like the tropical zone and be, you know, warm weather all the time. Today, I've talked about this so many times on the podcast. Today, me and my wife went and looked at a plot of land at 10,000 feet at elevation.
Oh my God.
Way up in the mountains in Cripple Creek, Colorado. That's what we're doing today. I guess that's my biggest life update is that having spent just about 1 year now, almost 1 year exactly at the post office, it's really put me ahead in terms of life goals and everything. So we're really like right on the verge of getting to that next level we've been trying to get to since we moved to Colorado like 4 years ago. It's funny. You're going to be like at ground level and I'm going to be like 10,000 feet higher.
Because I'm the yin to your yang. Because
absolutely.
You are absolutely like saying, I want to survive the apocalypse, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you're like getting ready for it. You know what I mean? And I'm like, I want to be ground zero for the apocalypse. And it's going to start with sea level rises and like a level 6 hurricane. And so
you'll do great in apocalypse. You have a black belt, you know, and I don't. When the mobs come at me, I'm going to be, I guess, waving a shotgun around, I guess. I don't know. You know, what I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be chilling up on the top of a mountain where nobody would ever think to come look for anyone. That's still the plan.
That's what I mean. You're going to be totally, you're going to have a plot of land. You're going to be high up in elevation. You're going to be fine. I'm just going to be, you know, listen, I figured out a long time ago that in the simulation, I came to watch as much chaos as I can. So
up close and personal chaos.
Yes.
It'll be perfect. What we'll do is you'll live stream the end of the world.
Yes.
And I'll like just provide commentary. And that'll be our episode. When we record on your end, there'll be like gunshots and rocket blasts going off in the background. And
Exactly.
Liberty Mungus will be on a loudspeaker outside of your house demanding you come out with your guzzling.
I was just talking to someone about Mad Max, just how great that series is.
It really is. It's just like the best. Okay, you're settled in Miami now. I'm still in Denver proper for the time being. It has been a long time.
I'm not settled. I'm getting settled.
Getting settled. You're putting the roots down.
I'm going back out to Southern California in a couple weeks, and I'm going to go get my motorcycle and have it shipped out. I still have a bunch of stuff to do, but yes, it feels good here. I just love Miami.
You're like a lizard, dude.
I know, bro. I got to have the warmth. I'm solar powered, you know? It's all there is to it.
I was just telling my wife that I'd really like to go to the South Pole one day. I'm dead serious. I'd like to do it. I love those really icy cold adventures and stuff. I love climbing mountains and sleeping outside stuff.
I was just in Baltimore and it snowed like two weeks ago. And I was like, oh my gosh, I got to get to some more weather. Oh my God.
But when we do buy the land, we're planning on just making a little homestead out there or whatever. But we still like to travel, my wife and I. So we'll need somebody to come house sit for us and like watch our goats and stuff. And our chickens, if you ever have a week out and you want to explore the mountain life, we'll do it during the summer, obviously, so you're not freezing to death.
Oh, that'll be awesome. So what does a homestead mean? What does that mean?
Our plan is to have a situation where we can provide ourselves with all the food we need. We've talked about this a lot on this show. There's no such thing as human existence without community. No man is an island. So you do have to have the help of other people or whatever. But our idea is to be as sustaining for ourselves as possible. My goal is to build a heated greenhouse and grow vegetables 24, have a half dozen goats to produce milk and cheese, have about 3 dozen chickens, so we have chickens to eat all the time, and probably buy a side of beef at a time and just deep freeze it so that we have to leave the property as little as often.
See, that's what I'm talking about. Your next step is you got to build the doomsday bunker. You're getting there, bro.
When we do build this, like the whole thing will be built in the mode of a bunker in that it would be really hard to get to and attack.
Oh my God, I love it.
Just to be clear here, guys, I am in no way some sort of crazy, paranoid, end of the world prepper type person. I do think that it's a good idea for a human being to be prepared in case those situations come around. I understand that it's also not possible for a lot of people, and I consider myself extremely, extremely fortunate to be able to pursue that end for myself. But, you know, I just want to be, you know, everything proof. If the government of the country changes suddenly, I still want to be like marginally affected by that. that kind of stuff will affect you very little when you go into town, you know, once a month.
I love it.
All I need is a desk to sit at and write and to run the magazine. And that's really it. And, you know, food to eat. I'm a really simple person when it comes to all that stuff. But, you know, we'll see. Once it's on the way to being built, I'll share pictures with you.
That's going to be so cool. It's going to be so cool, man. So what else is going on, man? How's the magazine going?
Well, you know what? I'm glad you asked. I'm really glad you asked. In our last episode, it hasn't been published yet, so you guys haven't heard it yet. It might have even been the episode before that. I kind of teased that the magazine was going through some changes, heading in a new direction, and it is. And I guess now By the time you're hearing this, probably it'll have been announced publicly on like our social media and online and everything. But if it hasn't, you'll be hearing it here first. So lucky you. The magazine is coming back. Thank goodness. We're on the verge of releasing our, at least all the cover art and contents for the 13th issue. And we now have a new print partner, Exalted Funeral. They're an online RPG, kind of like a heavy metal themed RPG tabletop gaming company, and they sort of market that kind of stuff. And the folks who own it, Kristen and Matt, are like some of the coolest people I've ever met. They're big fans of the magazine. They sponsored the short-lived Infinite Horrors podcast, and they're big fans of the Infinite Horrors spinoff and the Infinite Worlds magazine. And they really didn't want to see it cease production. So they kind of jumped in and they're like, we'll tell you what, we'll front the money to print the issues and pay the contributors, and then we'll sell the magazine from our website. And then once we've earned back what we spent on it, then we'll just split the profit. So basically, it becomes more or less risk-free for me. Obviously, if we fail to sell any copies, I'll be on the hook for what they spent. But I still get to maintain 100% creative control. The magazine will look exactly how it always has, like super high quality, heavy paper, full color, ad-free. All of that stuff will still be true. They don't want to change anything about the magazine at all. The good news is that here's the thing, is like I'm cut out to be a magazine editor because I'm good at editing, because I have an eye for art. I have the things necessary to do it in terms of like my taste and my knowledge of the genre. And I, for that reason, I think I make a really good magazine editor. The thing is that I make a fucking terrible business person. I kind of dislike business as a practice. It's sort of soul draining to me. So it is really hard for me to try to keep the momentum of being a business person up. So in terms of running Infinite Worlds as a business, I just fell behind. I just couldn't do it. Keeping up with the paperwork, having to answer every customer's emails, having to deal with all of the shipping, having to deal with all of the complaints, having to deal with this and that and this and that, and putting the magazine together, it's just too much. It's too much for a person to do, especially when you just don't have any interest in business. So my mistake when starting the magazine was not getting a business partner in the first place. So I could run the creative side and they can do the business side. But luckily, I found one along the way who's as good a business partner as I could ask for. They have a huge network. They sell tons and tons. I don't want to guess at their actual figures. I don't want to put them in a frame or anything like that. But they sell a lot. They're doing great as a business. And they're very talented business people. They're also creatives too, and just generally very, very cool people. But they're great at business. They're like business geniuses. Like they'll run Kickstarters for things and get like $1 million. So they're really, really good at what they do. So I'm really excited to be partnering with them. And we've got a new issue coming out. I'm really excited about the contents of it. It's going to look beautiful. I just saw the uncolored cover art today. We are coming back. We're going to keep doing what we've been doing. Selling magazines. You just won't buy them at the Infinite Worlds website anymore. You'll buy them at exaltedfuneral.com from now on. And of course, I'll make that known to everybody when we get around to that. So that's what's going on with the magazine. I'm really excited.
Dude. Oh, that's great. Congratulations, man. That's congratulations. Well, that's what business is, man. It's always constant course corrections. I don't think people really realize that. It's like you're always having to adjust to the market, adjust to what you're interested in. And so, yeah, it's great, man. You've been able to adapt. So that's great.
This is the 13th issue of the magazine coming out. And unlucky 13, you know, I'm not a big believer in superstition, as you surely well know at this point. But this magazine kind of had me believe in it because the 13th issue proved almost impossible to get out.
Really?
Oh, the struggle to get this issue out has been unreal, man. Unreal. Like I had a whole nother issue planned and I've got a ton of contents for it, but then some key interviews fell through. And because of that, I just didn't feel comfortable releasing the issue. So I had to shelve it after having put months of work into it. And then I got another cover artist and that cover artist flaked on me. And then I finally got a great cover artist. Then one interview subject I had fell through again. And then I had to find another interview. And it's been like a 5-month process of consistently trying to put this issue together. And it kept falling apart.
Oh my gosh.
There was a bit of a curse on this issue, but now I feel like it's fixed, you know? At this point, for this issue to not see the light of day, I'd have to like die between now and a month from now.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that would prevent this from happening. So
let's not let that happen, right?
I try not to let that happen.
Oh, dude. So you know what, man? Listen, let's get cut right to the chase.
All right.
There is only one thing on my mind, and I'm sure on your mind,
okay,
that is Dune 2.
Dune.
I am freaking the F out. I almost went today, but I was like, you know what? I'm going to wait until we can talk about
okay
what we're excited about. And I, you know what?
I haven't seen it, so it'd be just you telling me about it. So I'm glad you waited at
no,
least.
No, I know. And I don't want to do that. I want to talk about, like, what are the things that you're most expecting to see in this new installment, man, in part two. I'm going to start right now.
God, yeah.
I want to, if I don't see the Guild Navigators in this freaking part two, I am going to lose my mind.
I hope they're giant fish people. I haven't seen the first one in a couple of months. I know there's a scene where they visit him, but are they not visible in that scene? Is that what it is?
No, dude. You never see the Guild Navigators.
Yeah, okay.
You never see the Guild Navigators.
That's that bummer. Same scene where you see that crazy spider with hands.
For those who don't know, the Guild Navigators, you know, when you, what, how space travel works in Dune is you have these Holtzman generators or engines. And what they basically do is they shoot you through hyperspace.
Mm-hmm.
And what the Guild Navigators are able to do is they're able to use the psychedelic aspects of the spice to navigate that, like, hyperspace. But to do that, they have to ingest, they almost have to live in, they live in a chamber that is like gaseous spice. So they somehow take the spice, which is a very psychedelic substance, and it gives them prescience so they could see into the future. But it deforms them, and it deforms them into these, like, mutant, hardly even any more human creatures. They're really not. They're more like you were saying.
Right.
They're more like tadpole fish, like giant fish creatures.
David Lynch's version of them is very fish tadpole-y.
Yes.
I'm not sure if they ever describe their physical appearance in the book. I don't think they do.
Yeah, they talk about how they're very deformed.
Yeah, it just says, like, kind of vaguely that they're totally deformed. And I think it does say something about them being able to breathe the spice.
They're just breathing it. Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely want to see that. I'm really excited to see Christopher Walken as the Padishan Emperor.
Oh my gosh. I just watched King of New York with Christopher Walken, an old like 1990 movie. He's amazing.
It's funny. I had my wife watch Things to Do in Denver When You're Dead, because we live in Denver, and he's the villain in that movie.
That's right. Yeah.
He's been in a ton of movies. Christopher Walken has a lot of range as an actor. I think a lot of people don't quite realize that. He does kind of act like Christopher Walken in all of his movies. He's got, like, a sort of a specific thing, but his range is pretty impressive. If you've never seen Deer Hunter, he's got the best scenes in Deer Hunter, and that's a movie that stars Robert De Niro.
Yeah.
He out-acts Robert De Niro in that movie. To me, he does.
No two ways about it. Deer Hunter, he carries that movie. And Robert De Niro is amazing, but he is so intense.
His character is the reason to watch that movie, really. It's a great movie anyway.
This is worth describing. So Deer Hunter is about Vietnam and the Vietnam War. And Robert De Niro gets out of Vietnam and Christopher Walken gets left behind. And he goes back to rescue him. And by the time he gets to him, Christopher Walken is so out of his mind, like,
yeah,
playing Russian roulette. That scene with him playing Russian roulette.
The scene where he comes in, where they're all playing Russian roulette, and he comes into the room and, like, pulls the gun out of the guy's hands and puts it to his own head.
Oh my gosh.
It's one of the most intense scenes I've ever seen in any movie.
Ever. Ever.
You know, I love Christopher Walken. I'm a little skeptical, to be honest with you. The thing that's got me the most skeptical about this movie is Austin Butler.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's a bad actor in any way. I haven't seen enough of him to think he's a bad actor, but I watched that Elvis movie and I hated it as much as I could hate a movie. It was unbearable. Like, I was having so much trouble watching it. That kind of put a sour taste in my mouth. But again, that's not his fault. Like, I can imagine being in that position and being that actor and having to struggle with that stuff. I don't hate him as an actor, but I am a little skeptical. So, you know, I'll reserve judgment until I see him. He's got a tough act to follow, honestly. Sting as Fade Rautha is one of the most iconic things that ever happened in sci-fi.
So good. So
it's so tight. I mean, he overacts the shit out of it. And most of his version of the character is just Sting's physique. You know, it's not really like Sting as an actor, but it's still super iconic. And I wonder if they're going to have Austin Butler in a loincloth.
I don't know. You know, the only thing that bummed me out about the trailer that I'm kind of leery of is I don't like when they film scenes and they switch to black and white. So hopefully it's pulled off in such a way that it's really cool.
It's a flashback.
But I don't know. I hate that.
It comes across as gimmicky for sure. But he's a deft director.
Yes.
He'll pull it through.
I think so too. And I heard the reviews are stellar.
Yeah, I read a review that was saying that like the movie could have used more humor. And I was just like, what the hell are you talking about? There's no humor in Dune. Yeah. Have you never read Dune? You don't even smile one time while reading Dune.
It's for adults. You know what that reviewer wanted? They wanted Star Wars.
Yeah.
And guess what? And I love Star Wars, but guess what?
Yeah.
George Lucas ripped off Dune and he made a version of Dune that was basically Flash Gordon for kids. Mm-hmm. And so,
goofy and silly and funny, and it has comic relief and everything. Dune is not supposed to have. In fact, they added two or three comic relief parts in the first movie, like two or three laughs. But even then, I was just like, unnecessary. You didn't really need to do that.
Doesn't belong, yeah.
What other sci-fi stuff? This whole time I've been doing this, I've still been reading and watching stuff. So we got some stuff to talk about.
You know, dude, this is wild, okay? So now that I'm getting more solidified and like putting down roots, I love video games. I've always loved video games. Mm-hmm. I've owned a console from every single generation of consoles, like from Atari 2600 to when I was a little kid, all the way through Nintendo 64, NES, and television, Sega Genesis, Sega Dreamcast, all the PlayStations, Xboxes. And so finally, I was traveling in the van, I switched to a Nintendo Switch, didn't really dig that. And so, I finally got a PlayStation 5.
Cool.
And oh my God, man, I'm telling you, I got the first game that I've been really, really cracking out on is Star Wars, Jedi Survivor.
Okay, cool.
And the reason I'm bringing it up is because it's really, for the first time, I feel like it's like playing a movie. So I feel like the cutscenes, the graphics are so effing good. It's mind-boggling. And it's kind of blowing my mind. You know, we're reaching this point with AI and technology where my jaw's on the ground just as I'm playing this thing. And I'm like, this is... Ultimately, when I was a little kid watching Star Wars, I wanted to be and play a Jedi. And now this is as close as I've ever gotten. I cannot believe not only how good the graphics are, not only how good the gameplay is, but how great the story is.
I love that.
It is unbelievable.
I think Star Wars as a franchise is coming back around to like making storytelling the center point of their universe. Because I think they strayed away from that a lot over the past, 25 years or so.
Yeah. And I don't watch like Clone Wars. I don't watch a lot of the anime. There's a lot of it I don't watch. I watch some Ahsoka. You know, I've loved, what is it? Andor. Is that what it was? Yeah, I love that. That was adult. Anything that's adult, I dig. And I thought that was really good. Some of it, like some parts of Mandalorian where I'm like, or Obi-Wan.
There are good parts to both of them. But I thought the second half of the series of Mandalorian was pretty whatever.
Yeah.
There were some good parts to it, but I kind of completely lost interest in Mando, truthfully.
That's what I mean. And so to go, you know, as a sci-fi and as a Star Wars fan, you know, the universe now is so big. There's, you know, from books to whatever, it's hard to say, oh, I love it all. I don't. But this game and what is happening with games now, I can't even believe it. It's mind-boggling, man. It's really, really cool.
Since you mentioned video games, I've talked a lot of times about how I haven't owned a video game system in years and years and years, and I don't play video games. Mm-hmm. Just this week I came home from work and my wife is like, I bought an Xbox Series S. And I was like, oh, okay. So I've been playing Resident Evil 2. They did like a remaster.
Oh, yeah.
I've been playing that. One of the few games I ever played all the way through was when I played Resident Evil 2 on PlayStation back in the 90s. So I'm playing it again. But that's how corny I am. I'm like, I'm just going to play the same game I already played.
But I heard it's amazing. I heard the remasters are amazing.
It's incredible. Like, it's blowing my mind. I'm having so much fun playing it. And I also downloaded Dead Space, which is a kind of a highly well-reviewed survival horror game, similar to Resident Evil, but with robots set in space. So I'm looking forward to doing that. I don't have much spare time, so it'll probably be like a whole year before I finish that game. I mean, I should get through Resident Evil 2 fairly quickly because I've already played it before. So yeah, I'm back in the video game universe again as a player for the first time in 15 years. 15 years. My wife just wanted to play Fable really badly.
Oh yeah, Fable was a great game.
Yeah, so she's been playing that, and we both want to play Red Dead Redemption and Red Dead Redemption 2, the Western adventure game.
You know, I never played Red Dead Redemption, and I have a friend who's into video games, and I was talking to him about them, and he's like, dude, Red Dead Redemption is the his favorite game that he's ever played. And I was like, damn, you know, I'm so into sci-fi, so.
Yeah, I'm into sci-fi too, and I try to keep it, you know, I take that back. I don't really try to keep it sci-fi in my life or whatever. It's just that when I pick a new book to read or I pick a new show to watch, it just tends to be that. And that's, you know, obviously why I started the magazine, because I noticed that trend about myself. But I also love horror. I also love Western stuff. I love Mountain Man stuff, you know, like Jeremiah Johnson.
Oh, you probably love Red Dead.
Yeah, huh? Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. That's what I'm thinking. I played Red Dead Revolver at a friend's house way back in the day. Mm-hmm. This is like a shooter game where you're like shooting at each other, but with six shooters mm-hmm. and like repeating rifles. So, you know, I'm looking forward to that. Pretty soon I'll start being able to talk to you guys and to you guys, the listeners, about video games. So I'll be able to add that into my story repertoire here pretty soon. So I am excited about that. So that Star Wars game is good. What else you got, man? What else has been going on?
I just started playing. So when I was traveling, I don't have, because I still have half my stuff up in North Florida. Mm-hmm. So I just have my iPad. I mean, really, my iPad on my travels has been iPad Pro, has been like, I do everything. I edit videos on it. I watch stuff on it. It's like, it's unbelievable. And now they just are starting to release, it's so powerful. They're starting to release like AAA like console games for the iPad. And so even Resident Evil 4. Yeah, dude, that's what I mean. We're entering this, and this is what will segue into this, you know, into what's happening tech wise for the world. But, you know, it's unbelievable that this iPad can now play Resident Evil 4, which is a top level PlayStation 5, PlayStation 4 game. And so another game, I got a game for PS4 and then COVID hit and I couldn't play it. And it's called Death Stranding, and it was by...
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And so I just started. So they just released it for the iPad Pro.
Oh, sweet.
And so I was like, all right, I'm going to try. It's like $20. I'm going to try it. You play with a PlayStation controller. And it's by Hideo Kojima, who's one of the greatest video game directors mm-hmm. ever. And he created Metal Gear Solid. And so he's this visionary, his studio, unbelievable. And so I got the game. It's Kojima Productions. And so I got the game, and then COVID hit, right? So we go into another freaking apocalyptic moment, and I can't play it. So recently, they just released it like a month ago, and so I just downloaded it, and I started playing it, and it is the most intense sci-fi story. This guy is – I feel like I'm in an acid trip. I'm in his brain during an acid trip, and that's what this game is. It's called Death Stranding, and it is absolutely, it's apocalyptic about this guy. It's the dude from Walking Dead.
Norman Reedus?
Yes, Norman Reedus. Yes.
Yeah, Norman Reedus.
From Walking Dead. And it is freaking unbelievable. So you start as him, and it's the craziest concept, because what it is it's like the United States has fallen, and there are these creatures who have, like, I don't know yet if they're interdimensional creatures or whatever, but they are, people have, Norman Reedus's character has psychic ability, so he can sense them. So he's like a level two. Other people can see them. And so these creatures are like really, really dangerous. And if you die, you enter another dimension, but you can come back.
Oh, interesting.
From this other, you, it's called repatriating. And so you come back from this other dimension. It's not just like, oh, you start, you know, you get another life. It is so intense and so heavy. And so what he's doing, there is everything is disjointed, right? The world is, America is like fractured, and he has to deliver packages. Dude, it's so crazy.
All right.
And he has to go across these terrain and encounters these creatures, right? And dude, you have, it's so wild. So he's delivering a corpse. It's his mom's corpse.
Oh no.
It's his mom's corpse, right?
Oh man.
And he has to deliver, this is like one of the missions. And so one of the first missions. And so you have to deliver the corpse to an incinerator, because if you don't do it within 48 hours, then these creatures come and it creates some kind of a explosion or crater and just further like fractures the world. This is the way I'm getting it now. And so you've got this character and he's walking across this terrain with a corpse on his back, and he's like reeling to the left and reeling to the right. And you have to keep, not only do you have to navigate the terrain, but you have to keep him upright so he doesn't fall. It's the weirdest thing I've ever experienced.
Interesting.
Anyways,
that's what I mean.
Interesting. Weird.
The Hideo Kojima, I didn't know his name, of course, but he first came to my radar when I was a little kid, because I had heard about Snatcher, the video game Snatcher, the PC. It's like a PC game, and it got made, I think it was on a couple of consoles, but it's a heavily cyberpunk video game. Kind of hard to describe Snatcher or whatever, but it has a heavily Blade Runner sort of like aesthetic, a cyberpunk aesthetic, but it also has crazy creatures and cyborgs and like Terminator aesthetic. So yeah, I love Kojima. Wish I could interview him for the magazines.
He's a genius.
Yeah, genius.
I know, he's a genius. He really is, because what he's doing here with Death Stranding, and people are fanatical about the game. So obviously I'm going to play it, because I'm like, listen, this guy is obviously a sci-fi visionary and a genius. And this, you know, medium of video games is the, like, a new narrative. Dude, let's face it, man. Video games are, I've been listening to a lot of podcasts on the video game industry, just because I kind of fascinated me when I got the PS5 again. And so I've watched, there's a great series on Netflix about video games. It's like, I don't remember what it's, Game Up or something like that. And it's about, they kind of chronicle the video game industry from the time of Pong all the way to today. And I've listened to a couple podcasts on it. And, you know, the reality is that video game industry is bigger than the music industry and the movie industry combined. So as sci-fi fanatics, and as a sci-fi, just, you know, it's my life. Mm-hmm. I was like, I want to play and experience the best of the best in sci-fi. So yeah, it's been a cool kind of diversion.
Like I said, I'm starting to move towards that stuff too. I kind of resisted it for a long time, mostly because I'm trying to be a writer and everything, but I just, because of my work schedule, I come back at like 6:30 in the evening and I only have like an hour to kill. And it's really hard to like gear yourself up to write.
Oh yeah.
When you know you've only got like an hour to do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, for
so
sure.
It's really hard to like get the creative juices flowing. So sometimes I need something to kill time that I don't have to gear up to do. And video games work pretty well for that.
Yeah.
It's winning me back over after me resisting for a really long time. What else is going on? Here's some stuff. I'm a big fan of the Three Body Problem series, the books, the novels. I don't know if we've talked about them. We've talked about them a lot.
Yeah, I love them also, okay, good, yeah. Man. Yeah, they were amazing.
The series was sold, and I think it's going to be Netflix, I think, making it now.
I saw that.
And that's supposed to be coming out pretty soon, and I saw these trailers for it. It's coming out March 21st, and it isn't on Netflix. Yes, it is on Netflix. And I was like really excited about this, getting pretty excited about it. And then the other day I came home, and I saw on one of the streaming platforms, I think it was a different stream. I don't think it was Netflix, actually, now that I think about it. They have Three Body that's available. I was like, oh, sweet, Three Body. And I assumed that was the Three Body Problem series that was being made. I started playing it, and it's this really, really poorly produced Chinese language adaptation of the novels. And it is very badly produced. And it's really crazy because it's such a huge phenomenon in China. If I had stuck with it, maybe it would have gotten good. You know what I mean? But it starts off with the production quality is low. The acting is not very good. And I don't just mean that as a language barrier type thing. I watch lots and lots of subtitled movies. I watch movies from all over the world. So, you know, I could tell when somebody's acting poorly, even when it's in another language. I was really disappointed because I thought this was the adaptation that I had been waiting for. And they had released it and it was just a huge letdown. And it was, I wouldn't mind if it was just Chinese language. That wouldn't have bothered me even a little bit, but I just looked it up just now and it actually has fairly good reviews, decent reviews, but from what I watched, it was low quality, but it's not the series. You know, it's not the Netflix series. So I tricked myself into thinking that the series had been made and had been a huge letdown. I was like, man, I thought they spent a lot of money on that. I can't believe it turned out like this. And then that's just me being stupid. So that happened. So we still have another month before the series drops.
So I don't know. I don't know what happened. You know, this is really interesting because I remember that that a year or two ago, it was announced that the Three Body Problem, that the rights to that were snatched up by Amazon.
Yeah, it was Amazon initially.
And so what happened?
I don't know. I guess they got sold somewhere behind the scenes because it was Amazon that bought them. I think I read one of the headlines on our podcast, or at least I think we talked about it.
And do you remember how much it was reported that they paid for the rights to this?
Yeah, it was $1 billion. $1 billion.
Exactly.
With the B. Literally, when I saw this Chinese adaptation, I thought they had spent $1 billion, and then this is what they had turned out. And I was just like, you got to be kidding me. I was like, where did the other $999 million go? You know, because this looks like it was filmed on somebody's cell phone some of the time.
It's such a heady.
I'm looking forward to it, man, for sure.
Series. Yeah, it's going to be really, really interesting to see how they do it.
I don't know if I mentioned it on our last episode, but I've reread the whole series just recently, like reread them again. So just to be caught up, here's some other stuff that happened. So my knowledge of Eastern European science fiction is fairly limited. I know that Russia has a very thriving science fiction scene since like the 60s. And really my only serious connection was I had seen the movie Stalker repeatedly. That's a movie by Andrei Tarkovsky. It came out in 1980 or 1979, something like that. And it's a great movie.
Supposed to be a masterpiece. I just read about that and I have not seen it yet.
I've seen it a couple of times. And the thing that makes it cool is that it's one of those negative space films. And what I mean by that is that it's not the stuff that's shown on camera. It's the stuff that is kind of alluded to, the atmosphere that it creates. And I know that's like a really pretentious way to review a movie, but it really is like that. Like if you watch it, you'll see for yourself. It's just like, what the fuck the whole time?
Really?
Yeah, nothing even really crazy ever happens on camera, but at the end, you never forget it. You never forget the movie. So I had seen that, and I had read Stanislaw Lem's Solaris, but had never seen either of the movies. And Stanislaw Lem is from Poland, I think.
Yeah, I mean, Solaris was amazing. The first one, yeah.
But I had never seen either of the movies. I'd only ever read the book.
Okay.
Okay, so I gave myself a project. I went and watched both versions of Solaris just so that I could compare it to. What's funny is Solaris, the original film, you know, the widely regarded incredible film from the early 70s, was also directed by Andrei Tarkovsky, who directed Stalker. And it was great. It was a pretty close approximation of the novel. I mean, especially for what you could do for like 1971. I think that was around when it came out. Mm-hmm. Technology and budget and everything. So I really enjoyed it. And then I did the best decision I've made in forever. Was I decided I'd read Roadside Picnic, which is the novel that Stalker is based on. Mm. And it was one of the best books I have ever read in my entire life. I can't recommend a book enough to anyone. The only thing I don't like about it is that it's kind of, they're Russian writers. It's a little sexist. The women in the book are treated as like objects and not like they're getting whistled at all the time. I just mean that the writer writes them as objects. They don't ever do anything important to the plot in the book. Mm-hmm. And that's a disappointing, but it was released in 1972. And that's by Arkady and Boris Strugatsky. And the Strugatsky brothers are probably Russia's most famous writing pair. They're dead now. They've both passed on. One died in the early 90s and one died in 2012. But I've since become familiar with them and, you know, learned about their lives and learned about their additions to the science fiction pantheon and how they're looked at in Russia. They were at their peak in like the 80s. They were as famous in Russia as like all of America's writers combined. They were way more famous than any to Russians than any American science fiction writer was to any American. So they were huge celebrities. Long story short is definitely, if you haven't had a chance, guys, read Roadside Picnic. It is awesome.
I gotta check it out.
It turns out that Stalker, the film Stalker, is really a film adaptation of the first 100, maybe 80 pages of the novel. And the story goes on way past what takes place in the events of the film.
So the book was good though, huh? You like it? You recommend it?
I loved it. It expands on the idea of everything that happens in Stalker so much and explains a ton and has really cool characters, has a really cool feel. There's tons of really great philosophy in it. It's a really good novel. Like I highly, highly, highly recommend that to you guys if you haven't had a chance.
Oh, I'm going to check it out.
And also the translation I read was excellent. There was never any sort of like stilted, clunky language ever. So I think the common translations that are out there are really good. I think the one I read, it was translated to English by a Russian. I'm not sure who it was.
I'll have to check that out. I can't wait.
Antonina Buis. I think is how you say it. That was the translator of the one I read, and it's awesome.
Ah, that's so cool. That's so cool.
Or actually, I found another name. It could also have been Olena Bormashenko. Either way, I think it's two Russian people who did the translations, but they're great. They're great. All right. I don't know what else really has been going on with me in terms of...
Dude, you know what I've been watching as
that?
Far as TV shows that I absolutely am fanatical about?
What's that?
Is a show on Apple TV called For All Mankind.
Oh, man.
And it is amazing.
I've heard amazing. So much about this. One of my best friends, my buddy James, who if you guys are familiar with this podcast and everything, he's the guy, the boomer, who kind of inspired me to create Infinite Worlds or was with me when the moment of inspiration happened. At least he's one of my oldest friends. And he tells me all the time about how great this show is. And I just don't have
it's Apple. So freaking. Oh, you don't have Apple. Oh, that's right. You're an Android guy.
Yeah, I have an Apple desktop, but I don't use it for anything but work.
Oh. Let me tell you something, man. You're gonna have to break down and get Apple TV because Apple TV has become like the new HBO for sci-fi.
Okay, all right. That's what I've heard.
Asimov's Foundation.
Yeah, yeah.
For All Mankind.
I was so close to getting it when they did the Foundation series, just so I could check it out, just so we could talk about it on here.
Yeah, and they just released a new show called Constellation.
Oh, really?
And so I haven't watched that yet. Yeah, and so it's with the... I don't remember her name, but it was with the woman who was the star of not Charlize Theron, but of Prometheus, and she was in Alien Covenant, and she's the star of this.
Her name is Noomi Rapace. Yeah, she's also the girl with the dragon tattoo.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
the original girl with the dragon tattoo, the European one.
Yeah, the European one. Dude, that and so Constellation is supposed to be really good, kind of like an Interstellar type.
Okay, cool.
They describe it as Interstellar meets Gravity. I haven't seen it yet, but For All Mankind, it is the coolest premise. It starts with the moon landing, and I'll give you the spoiler because it'll suck you in. But as you're watching it, the star, Joel Kinnaman, is watching the moon landing. And you could see him kind of like watching and he's kind of bitter faced and he's at a bar and he's drinking. And then you realize why he's upset because it's the Russians that land on the moon first. Mm-hmm. So the Soviet Union lands on the moon first and it's so cool. And so it sets off this space race with the United States way behind the eight ball. So now the United States has to land on the moon. And what is even better about it is every season jumps forward 10 years.
That's awesome.
Oh, yeah. And so you get to, then you're at 1970, then you're in the 80s, then you're in the 90s, and then you're in the 2000s. And what's cool about it is it's paralleling. It's really cool. It's very, very, it's very, like, all, there aren't many alternate histories. Philip K. Dick, right?
Right, there right. Like The Man in the High Castle.
Yes, it reminds me of Philip K. Dick. And what's cool about it, though, is you see references to music and things. And like the start of each season starts with like a catch up of headlines. And some of them are like, whoa, John Lennon's still alive, right? He didn't die and he's playing this big benefit concert and this. So it's really cool. And it kind of like reflects on all of our, you know, our entire history, but with different spins. Some things are the same, some things are not. So it's very freaking cool. They go, yeah, they go to the moon, get a base on the moon, all the things that would have happened, you know, if we would have been behind. So it's, you would love it.
This alternate history is going on. And just this past week, a private American company landed a lander on the moon.
I know.
It's the first time America has been back to the moon since the 70s.
Yeah.
Back when Stanley Kubrick filmed the landing in the studios.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
All those actors that NASA paid to pretend to land.
No, and it's really cool because it makes you really – it's – I think – that I'm really enjoying it so much because not only is it like an alternative history and that's really fun, but now that we're in the midst of this whole SpaceX thing and with going back to the moon and talking about Mars, it really puts it all in perspective because it's really a reflection on what's happening. Yes, all good sci-fi is how to interpret it from a different lens what's happening now. So it's really, I recommend that. That is one of my favorite sci-fi things I've ever seen.
I talk to my wife about this all the time. And, you know, pretty much anybody who'll listen to me talk for more than 5 minutes is I think it's really important for people to know history in order to understand the things happening in the world around them now. Mm-hmm. I think it's important to know the history of World War II, the Cold War, the space race. All that stuff is really relevant to all the things that happen in our still happen in our daily lives. And so I really enjoy the idea of alternate history because alternate history helps you learn real history. When you watch an alternate history program, you're like, wait a second, did that really happen? And you tend to look up what really happened.
Yes.
Some of us are old enough to remember the Cold War and remember the Soviet Union as an entity, but it ended 30 years ago, almost 35 years ago. You know, there are people old enough now to run for president who were born after the Soviet Union dissolved. There's a huge, I think, a gulf of understanding some of the stuff that happened in the 20th century with some of the younger people now. And that's not your fault necessarily, younger people. I'm not blaming you. But that just happens naturally with as history progresses. You know, people don't readily remember the events of 100 years ago, 150 years ago. So the longer back it goes, the less likely you are to for it to be relevant to you, you know. But things like this that make it kind of relevant to younger people are really, to me, I think that's important, especially for science fiction.
Yeah, and what's cool now is not only the whole SpaceX thing, but just what happened and broke last week where they announced that Russia is deploying like nuclear weapons in space that are going to be capable of taking out our satellites. I think that's what it was. It was either that or they're deploying something where they're going to be able to pull satellite or knock our satellites out. Mm-hmm. Especially, and I think they're motivated by the whole Ukraine war with what happened with the ability of Ukraine using the Starlink
right.
satellites to counter them. So I think now they're like, well, we'll just develop a new technology that will, you know, disable. And it's like, holy shit, we're back in the space race. You know?
It's the Cold War II, dude. It's
yes.
Cold War II nuclear boogaloo.
And that's what, you know, eventually is what really happens in For All Mankind.
Yeah.
Is that whole space race. It's happening there. Oh, it's so cool. You got to watch it. So you're going to have to get Apple TV.
I'm going to have to get it. Hey, listen, we basically hit our hour now. As always, it's great to catch up. We didn't have a specific subject to this episode. And I've actually had some people reach out to me lately and ask for new material. And I doubt they were necessarily reaching out for us to just kind of catch up and just talk about this kind of stuff. But we do have to get this on record. All this stuff has to get on record.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it just has to. So forgive us for kind of spending a whole episode on this. We'll come back next time with a more directed episode, with an episode that's, you know.
Oh, no. We're coming back next time. We'll do it next week, and we'll come back with on Dune 2.
Oh, yeah. So. Perfect. Perfect. Yeah, we'll come back with Dune 2 next. And then, you know, that'll be awfully relevant, won't it?
Yes.
After that, we'll start trying to, you know, put these together a little bit better.
And we have an episode to drop. I think Andrew has an episode to drop, right? From the last one we recorded.
He does. So, well, yeah, well, there'll be another episode. It won't be two blabbing episodes in a row, is what I'm trying to tell you. We'll try to keep it to a minimum. I also have people reaching out and being like, I love you guys' podcast because it's just like sitting around and talking with your friends about sci-fi.
Hell yeah.
When I hear that from you guys, when I get that feedback, specifically that feedback, you don't know how much it warms my heart. My heart's mechanical, so it's really hard to warm it. So I really appreciate the job you guys do telling me nice things like that. Because sitting around and bullshitting about science fiction and science fiction philosophy and technology, you know, it's my favorite activity, right?
I know. So, and next time we'll catch up a little bit more on, especially after Dune, we'll catch up a little bit more on all the AI madness going down. So
we might have to do another AI episode. It's getting so much.
I know. Well, you're going to have to.
All right, man.
All right. Next time, brother. Dune 2, watch it. Everybody go see it because we're going to talk about that next. All right, brother.
All right, man.
Life.
Be easy. Guys, if you're enjoying the Infinite Worlds podcast, you could definitely check out more Infinite Worlds related stuff by visiting our website, infiniteworldsmagazine.com. There you can subscribe to Infinite Worlds Magazine. It's a full-color, ad-free science fiction magazine featuring stories, comics, and illustrations from creators all over the world. You could also sign up to our mailing list. You can follow us on Instagram at Infinite Worlds Magazine or on Twitter at IWSciFiMag. Also, you can find Nick the Tooth on Instagram at Nick the Tooth and follow his wild escapades. Theme song was written by Christopher Whitaker, and our podcast is produced by Andrew Alonso.